Welcome to the Chicago Camps Podcast, brought to you in partnership with Simplecast. Publish your podcasts the easy way at simplecast.fm. Today, we're speaking with Margot Bloomstein, a speaker camp mentor for Speaker Camp Boston on October 11th. Margot is the principal of Appropriate Inc. and author of Content Strategy at Work. She is also not a fan of Phil Collins. Hey, Margot.
Hey, Russ. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being a mentor at Speaker Camp Boston on October 11th. We are super excited to have you joining us.
I'm excited to be doing it. I think it's a great opportunity for speakers and budding speakers in the Boston area. So thanks for bringing it to us.
Oh, no problem. I know that you are always supportive of this type of an event, and we've spoken in the past about how to, you know, help bring that to more people. So I think having you come and be a part of it, well, you're just going to help us make it better. So my first question for you today is, how did you get started in public speaking?
Ooh, so this goes back pretty far, but I got started in public speaking probably through 4-H when I was 8 or 9 years old, I guess. For folks that aren't familiar with 4-H, that maybe didn't grow up in the country, although 4-H is in cities as well, it's sort of similar to Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, but it focuses, it isn't gender specific, and in 4-H clubs, you focus on all sorts of practical skills, from learning how to bake cakes that count, to photography and computer skills and sewing. And one of the big things every year was public presentations, where you got to go to a public presentation day and be judged on how well you could articulate your work and to talk about maybe different steps in a process, present against, before PowerPoint, present against a big poster where you had illustrated that process, and then do it all over again at the county fair every year. So that's really where I got my start in public speaking, in front of moving audiences at the county fair, where I was talking about maybe the steps in baking a pie or in something else that I had learned over the previous year.
Do you have a corduroy navy jacket with your name embroidered on it?
No, but I was probably wearing something that I had sewn. I never learned how to work with corduroy, though. I'm still looking to build up those skills.
Those were the 4-H jackets that we had in my high school. Fancy!
We didn't have, like, emblazoned jackets. Wow.
Oh, yes, and we had livestock and things like that. So, you know, I think that's because we both hail from the Midwest that this is so familiar to me.
Well, I'm not from the Midwest, but this was big in upstate New York. My club didn't focus on the animal science stuff so much, but yeah, I will say my pressed flower plaques and some of my baked goods, they've gone to the state fair. Don't want to brag, but that's what I'm doing. Yep.
So then is it your husband that's from Wisconsin?
Yes, he is from Wisconsin. I married into the cheese and dairy and beef industry, or world at least, I guess.
Well, you're married into Midwestern
stuff. Exactly, exactly.
Well, that's awesome, and we're happy to have you, of course. That's a pretty fantastic way to get started. I think, gosh, I wish my kids would have to do more of it. I've got an 10-year-old daughter. She'll be 11. And they are teaching them presentation skills now in school. Even in the junior high here, they're giving them slides, PowerPoints and stuff.
Oh, that's great. Nice.
And that's pretty cool. I've already worked on one PowerPoint deck with her once at that young age, which I think is, again, it's fantastic to see that that's happening.
That's great. Yeah.
So what do you think, when you're at a conference and you see a presentation, what do you think can make that presentation skew toward the, you know, less than great side of things?
Well, I can tell you, as a 4-H'er at the county fair, presentations did not go so well when you had rowdy people cut through the 4-H barns and didn't want to pay attention to you up there talking away. Today, what I see, it's still sometimes an issue with the audience, but not so much the audience being rowdy or anything like that on their way to the midway. Today, it's usually, I think, it falls on the shoulders of the speaker to really make sure they know their audience. I know for me, where when I've delivered presentations where I felt like I didn't really connect with the audience, it's because I didn't put in the time, I didn't do my homework ahead of time to really make sure that I understood their pain points, the challenges that maybe they brought to the problem, the stuff that kept them up at night. Recently, I heard someone say, when you deliver a talk and you don't really know your audience, it's like writing a love letter addressed to whom it may concern. You really need to make sure that you know who you're going to be speaking to so that you can deliver information that isn't just relevant to them, but really resonates with them and can really help them change their behavior. I think that when we talk about speaking at conferences or really any kind of content creation, it's that beautiful, possible kind of time travel that we're talking about. We're able to take somebody, whether it's a reader or somebody in the audience, we're able to take them from where they are now to where we want them to be. We're able to kind of change their hearts and minds in that way, but only if we really understand where they are now and understand their current motivations and concerns. When we fail to do that, that's, I think, when a talk goes south.
I think that's fantastic. And I think that I've made this reference more than once in these podcasts. I think that as presenters, we're a bit like drummers in a band, and that's that all four of your limbs are moving at once. So you're trying to remember this great story that you've put together, and you're trying to make sure that you're standing appropriately and you have got your slides working and the technology's working. And then you've got to say this content, but you've also got to make that connection to the audience, which means you're also kind of the lead singer in the band. So you're kind of like Dave Grohl trying to do all of that, hitting of the drums, you know, keeping everything in focus. And I think that's that's what makes this look really easy when we see people like you or a Jared Spool and so on get on stage. It looks really easy, but the reality is this is a lot of work, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. And can I just say, I'm so, so glad that you went with Dave Grohl and not Phil Collins. I'm definitely cool with that comparison.
Phil Collins never crossed my mind.
Awesome. Thank you. He never crosses my mind either. Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge because there's that combination of resonating with what you're saying and getting those messages right, both what you're saying and how you're saying it, which, of course, that's a big portion of content strategy, certainly at the editorial strategy around your message. But then also how we're communicating through body language and imagery, which those are all components in content strategy as well. I'd say that's kind of the content strategy of the rhetorical arena when you're engaging with an audience, and it's that exchange between audience and speaker or rhetor. And it's tough, but I think that there are things that we can learn, certainly with the opportunity for feedback. And that's, I mean, it's such like a small thing to talk about, but it's something that a lot of speakers, certainly a lot of new speakers, forget about. Usually when you're creating content, maybe you'll be posting a blog post or something like that and ask for comments at the end. And maybe people will be so generous with their time, not just to read what you've written, but then to also say what they think of it. I know that talking about generosity and comments on the internet is sort of an arcane, weird way to look at it. But, you know, sometimes it isn't all just thanks Obamacare went on your blog post or whatever.
Does this mean you aren't a Reddit user?
Not gonna even go there. But I'm sure they have great things to share about immigration reform or whatever on most blog posts I've written. But I do think it's a nice opportunity when you've got a live audience in front of you at the end to maybe you put up a link to where they can share feedback on speaker rate, or maybe you just go out into the audience afterward, and if you've got friends there, maybe you've prepped them ahead of time to say, hey, these are a few things that I'm trying to work on this time. You know, in past talks, I've gone too quickly. Can you pay attention to that for me and let me know afterward, did I do this any better this time around? So we have that opportunity to ask for feedback, and I always feel like if you don't do that, if you miss that opportunity, you're missing the opportunity to grow from your own talk. We're always giving that to the audience, telling them, here's what you can take away from this. But as a speaker, you need to think, well, what can I take away from this experience? How can I continue to improve as well?
I think that's really good feedback. And one of the things that I really like about these lovely smart devices that that are so common for all of us right now is Christina Woodkey, if she's in a presentation of yours, she'll probably hold hers up and record you and let you have a copy of it. I'll take mine and I use a tool called Dropvox, and it's it records directly to Dropbox, and it'll just be the audio of my talk, so I can go back and cringe and cry and listen to some of the smart things I thought I said, you know, being delivered with a thud. But it's it definitely helps you with your marks and your timing and things that you do, or even, you know, heaven forbid, the bad joke that misses. But
right,
it's always one of those things, and that's why we provide videos back to the speaker camp attendees, so that they can see it, you know, as simple as this is what you looked like when you walked on stage and you were awkward and uncomfortable, that you didn't do you as a presenter until you got there and ready, you know, that's not how it works when you're at a conference. So anyway, all of that stuff is great, a great mechanism for helping you improve. And I think that's fantastic that you bring that up. And it leads me to, there's kind of a two-parter here. And one of those is, how did you get better? Which I think you just kind of talked about. And then, maybe a better question for you right now is, what's the one thing you wish you knew about public speaking, you know, in the conference circuit, so to speak, not the 4-H circuit?
In the conference circuit, and I hate to talk about it like that, like the circuit or whatever, because I think that there are a lot of public speaking opportunities, and more importantly, opportunities to present to our colleagues and to people that are maybe interested in a portion of the industry in which we have expertise. There are a lot of those more informal experiences that I think it's easy to disregard or forget about, whether it's at a local meetup or even just in your own company, kind of gathering together people from another portion of it. If you're a designer, present to the developers, tell them at the end of a project, here's how it could have gone better, here's what I learned from working with you, here's how I think we can work better together next time. I feel like there's a lot of those types of experiences that don't require either submitting an application ahead of time or having loads of experience, but they're a good way to get a lot of that sort of experience. As far as in my experience, what I wish I knew kind of before really digging in and focusing a lot of my time and attention on speaking at conferences, I guess I wish that in some ways I knew more about how to engage with the psychology of an audience. Based on my background in design and in content, I know how to structure a message. And I know how to present that message both visually and verbally. But sometimes I feel like I wish I knew more about how to play to people's emotions and how to present tough and complex or very serious information, and then weave in humor appropriately and at what frequency that should happen. And I say that because I see speakers like, say, John Oliver. Granted, he's a comedian, but a lot of the topics that he focuses on now in his show, Last Week Tonight, a lot of them are very complex, very political, very, very serious. But he does a good job of presenting information that's important for an audience to hear, but then peppering it with humor so that it resonates with them all the more. And I think that that's what many audiences need, not just audiences that are tuning in to a comedian on Comedy Central, but that's what audiences at many of our conferences need too. I know every time I get up on stage, I always look at my talk as something where I need to entertain them first, and then after I've kind of gotten that initial laugh, that's when I've got the opportunity to educate them as well. And I need to deliver on both. I need to both entertain and educate so that they want to hear me. They want to go and say, okay, that was a good time, but also I took away these things from it. So I think that people want you to deliver in both of those capacities. And I'm still trying to figure out, well, what's the best way to order and structure information so that they're getting both of those things at the right frequency?
I think humor is possibly one of the most difficult things to do, especially when we're presenting content that is, you know, educational. It's very difficult if you are writing your bio or the conference proposal, to, you know, have somebody hear your voice if they've never heard your voice, or understand your humor if they've never spoken to you. And it's so easy for that to just miss and be that thud. So I think that humor is incredibly difficult. Timing is incredibly difficult. And those are, dare I say it, but learned things. Like, you have to kind of trip over your own feet a couple of times before you can figure out how to walk with humor.
Right, right. And I think it's one of the skills that we learn, similar to how we learn other aspects of public speaking, by looking for good examples, looking for those mentors. And if you can't ask them directly for feedback, then look at their work and break it down and see, okay, at what beats did they dive in for the joke? And at what beats did they keep it serious? And how did they structure things? Are things visual sight gags on their slides while they're speaking about something very serious? Or are they dropping the joke in there? Or are they the person in the interview that's bringing it back to the world of Phil Collins and Don Henley? Levon Helm. I mean, you could have gone with Levon Helm. That would have been so cool. Okay, but sorry, let's get back to this.
He will be Levon.
Yes. Oh, yes.
You know, the other thing, for me at least personally, that is really, really difficult is the art of the pause. Just like that. I am terrified of that pause, and I will leave speaker notes that'll be, you know, 144 point font that will say, take a breath, stop here, slow down, something that reminds me that that's something that needs to sink in, or this slide has a lot of content. Give them a chance to absorb it before you plow right on into the next thing.
Right.
And I think that's equally, for me, as hard as humor. Anybody who's talked to me more than once knows that humor is definitely not my strongest suit. I wish it was. That doesn't mean that it is.
Well, and I think it's humor and pauses. Those are the... It's sort of like what we learn as designers. If you come from a more visual background, you know that the way you create emphasis is through contrast. And maybe that entails leaving white space around things to direct someone's attention, to really take them in. And I think pausing is, it's the auditory and time-based white space so that someone can really focus on the points that you're making that kind of stand out in greater contrast.
I think that's a really fair and really great analogy, absolutely. So right now, after all of the 4-H's and everything else, why are you still doing public speaking and conference presentations today?
I guess two big reasons. I like to speak at conferences because, for one, I want to share and evangelize and teach about what I'm doing. I think the evangelism thing is, it's really big, especially as we're growing newer and emerging portions of the discipline. We want to make sure that people that could potentially hire for this work or are putting together web-related initiatives know to include, know to budget for specific aspects of it that they might not know about otherwise. That's certainly a big part of the content strategy discipline, even though we've been practicing it for a while. Content strategy as an area of focus has operated for more than 15 years now, especially in larger agencies, but it's something that still requires some education. Also, I want to share my techniques so that other people that are practicing content strategists, or other people maybe that are creative directors overseeing this work, or that don't have budget for this work but need to still execute on it, I want to make sure that I'm arming them with tools and techniques to be able to achieve similar results and really to deliver the best possible experience for their end users. I believe enough in content and content strategy that I feel like if we don't talk about it, we only end up hurting the people for whom we want to create good user experiences.
I think that's fantastic. I wholly support that. I think there's a lot to be said about giving somebody else your ideas. And I believe that when we learn something, we should share it. And this is a great forum for doing that. Letting people take those, run with them, have bad experiences with our experience or really good ones, and come back and share those and modify them and make them their own. And it only makes everyone better when we can share things like that.
Right. Right. Yeah. That rising tide lifts all ships. And I think we're kind of all in that together. And I guess the other aspect for me, because I'm self-employed, because I consult through Appropriate Inc., either in partnership with other independent consultants or with other agencies, for me, I've found that as far as content marketing goes, speaking at conferences is the best way I know to present and advocate for my own thought leadership, to share with potential clients as well as potential partners what I do and the perspective that I bring to it. I know other people that are self-employed focus more on maybe blogging or on tweeting about their work or publishing in other capacities. For me, getting on stage and talking about it certainly feeds my only child complex, but it's also a great way of saying, yeah, this is what I can bring to whatever you're doing as well.
That's outstanding. Finally, our last question for you. Well, I've got one more bonus question. why do you hope other people will start doing more presenting at conferences?
Like I said, I think the sharing aspect is huge. If we want to continue to grow our industry, however you define it, whether it's as small as content strategy or as broad as creating the modern web experience, if we want to continue growing that, we need to keep socializing our work, sharing what we're doing, discussing the best ways to do it, not just what's common or popular, but also what's emerging at the edges, because it's that work at the edges that pulls the rest of us forward. And then I think there's also a component that I really love in seeing like the work that you do with speaker camps, of saying to people that maybe are less likely to present or don't have experience presenting because maybe they're in an underrepresented minority. Maybe they've just never had the opportunity to sort of stake that claim and let themselves be the leading voice for a specific topic. I think it's important for other people to be getting up on stage so that we continue to diversify our stages. If we want to show that the web is built not just by white people, not just by dudes, but by people that are outside the U.S., people that are women, people that are in other underrepresented minorities, we need to put those faces forward so that other more junior people can learn from them as well.
I wholly agree. And as a white dude, I couldn't embrace it more, because I feel like the more we get new people on stages, the more that, the more I learn. Every time I see somebody new doing something that is just different than what I am, I'm always fascinated by it. It's so much fun to see them, especially when you see them hit that stride and you know that it's somebody's first time and you're going, holy cow, they're nailing it.
Yes, that's the best.
Yeah. And you see them kind of grabbing it and saying, all right, now I need to do more of this. What do I do? And kind of working through that and helping them out. I love seeing that. I love the diversity component of it. I feel like one of the things that we believe in at Chicago Camps is always a healthy majority of new speakers, and we try to be as balanced as we can, and we want to make sure that we've got more of those folks to choose from as well. I think we just did a prototype camp where probably at least 50% of the people speaking were first timers, and beyond a little bit of nerves, the feedback was fantastic. Probably one of the best events we've had.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's so fantastic. And we had other speakers who had been presenting before, kind of mentoring and coaching people that they knew that were first-time speakers. And we did podcasts with them to try to get them to open up and talk about their presentation before they did it, and give them a little bit of media to take with them, as well, of, look, here's something I've done, because we're not able to record those events, just logistics and stuff. But to give somebody a podcast, here's something that says, look, I can be interviewed. Here's how I am as a speaker to some degree. Those pieces that we can take with them. Anyway, we love that we can kind of help bring those audiences up. Like you said, the rising tide lifts all ships, and it's, I feel like the quality of the first time speakers that I've seen over the course of the last few years has gone up so much. And it's just, it's super exciting when you see that stuff. Cause I'm, you know, somebody who puts on events, I'm incredibly selfish about it and going, ooh, I've got this whole new bunch of people that we can put on stage. But as somebody who does speaking, I love it because I think, and I think you see this too, as we evolve and as we get more into our careers, the topics that we start to talk about find their own branches. Like for me, UX will always be a part of what I do, but to give a leadership talk this year or to talk about Skunkworks or things like that, that are different things that I'm running into, it's nice to be able to kind of evolve and see that there's more than enough people kind of doing the other topics. You know, like the UX topics or the content strategy topics. So it's kind of cool to evolve and see that there's still an excellent amount of people doing those presentations too. I don't know if that sounds kind of strange, but I meant it in a nice way.
No, yeah, I totally agree.
Awesome. Well, that was it, with the exception of the bonus question, which is In the Air Tonight or Sussudio.
Oh. Can we go with Everlong instead? We're not going back to Phil Collins. I can't do it.
Wow.
Unless we say Sussudio simply because of the American Psycho connection. And that's that I can get behind.
Wow, I would have failed you automatically. I was going to fail you just for the pause because it was a no-brainer of In the Air Tonight. But bringing back the American Psycho reference, you win with that. Outstanding.
Awesome.
Thank you, Margot, for joining us for a podcast, and we will see you on October 11th at Speaker Camp Boston.
Fabulous. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Chicago Camps podcast, brought to you in partnership with Simplecast. Publish your podcasts the easy way at simplecast.fm. And learn more about Speaker Camp and other Chicago Camps events on our website at chicagocamps.org.